a look at your Central Coast roadways. The 1400 block of Jose Avenue in the Santa Cruz area, have an accident there, CHP on the scene. And in King City, Mile End Road at Foothill Road, some pallets in the roadway there to watch out for. 475-1080 is the number to call with your traffic tips. Your Central Coast weather for today, partly cloudy for this Saturday afternoon. Lows in the upper 40s, highs in the lower 70s today. Same forecast for tonight. And tomorrow, partly cloudy as well. Coming up next on KSCO, we have the Saturday Special with your host, MZ.
Easton.
Hello. How's it going today?
Good. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine.
Good. We're at KSCO North here, and sometimes we don't. So we got to get the backhaul going right on. So, hey, are you as excited as I am about the forthcoming Saturday Special on water?
I am so excited. I'm dripping.
Yeah, Rosie, I did a live promo on the Good Morning Monterey Bay show yesterday with Rosie, and I think she was a tiny little bit, not too much, offended because I kept calling it Woota, you know, sort of like, you know, Brits pronounce it.
Exactly. I like that pronunciation better.
W-O-O-T-A.
Woota, and A-H Woota. At the end.
Yeah, so that'll be good. Hey, and I understand it's a K day today, right?
It is indeed.
K is...
She has landed. I can see her.
Kay has landed, and she is ready with pen in hand.
That's right. She's got her quill out.
Personally inscribe copies of her book that more and more people are, you know, it's going to be a New York Times bestseller. I don't know if it'll be this month or next month, but it's going to be there for sure because, you know, people who have bought the book even a year ago have said, you know, I finally got around to reading it, and this is the best damn book I've ever read. I mean, there's absolute genius in this book. Incredible wisdom and incredible humor and fun and everything. So, you know, your opportunity to meet the authoress herself, Kay Swirling, at the KSCO Studios, 2300 Portola Drive. So come on down. During the next couple hours, she might be there right up until 12:30 or so. And if you buy a book, by the way, it's $25 for the first book and $15 for each additional book. And every single cent of the proceeds, not 80%, not 20%, not 99%, but 100% of the proceeds go to feed your favorite radio station and help us make it even better so that you like us even more than you already do. But anyhow, we're going to get going with our program now, so let's start the program officially.
It's been a while since we had a discussion about water. You know, the kind we can drink, shower with, wash with, cook with, and irrigate with. People argue about global warming and climate change all the time, but nearly everyone agrees that we have a real problem with adequate supplies of fresh water. The contentious arguments erupt around the topic of how to solve the problem of adequate fresh water supplies. Enter the word desalination, or if you prefer, desalinization. Yep, yanking the salt out of the seawater to magically transform it into fresh water. Pretty cool, huh? Pretty expensive also. But then, how is it that cruise ships always have plenty of fresh water? The answer? Onboard desal plants. So it certainly should be doable on a larger scale in a cost-effective manner. Join Doug Deitch, Dr. Jason Holt, and me for the great desal discussion on the next KSCO special this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, right here on Now, let's be calm and accomplish something positive for a change radio, AM 1080 KSCO.
Good morning, a brighter day is here. Good morning, may we bring you cheer.
We've got time, we've got tunes, we've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go, it's today, you know, on KSCO Radio.
Well, that's a new twist, you know. The good morning jingle usually opens the program officially, but it didn't this time. It's okay, it's fine. You know, it's an omen of the unexpected, which is sure to happen here on your favorite radio station.
Boss, it's because I'm running the board.
And Billy is there. Billy is back here. He's been gone for a week, and so here we go. Anyhow, I can't hear the music. Fade it up here. Let's get it just right. The donut. There we go. Good. So stay with us. Then we're going to do Crossfire.
Good morning. Now stay right here on KSCO Radio.
Yeah. That's it. That's the music that portends a particularly controversial program. Now, I don't know, why is it whenever we talk about water, why don't we do this more often, you know, just to whet people's appetites and get them all hyped up? That's what usually happens when we talk about water on KSCO. And it may or may not happen this time. I want to introduce our two guests, Doug Deitch. Doug, are you in the studio there?
I'm right here.
Hey, welcome to KSCO. It's nice to meet you officially.
it's a pleasure to be here with Santa Cruz natives such as yourself.
Thank you.
And trying to be the effective public organ that we're trying to be here.
Public organ?
Yes, an information organ.
Oh, okay.
I consider myself part of the Water InfoWars team.
Okay. All right. So, Doug, you are a concerned citizen. Now, you're not a Santa Cruz native. You're a San Francisco native. Am I right?
Yes.
But
yes.
You've been in Santa Cruz a long time, and you're concerned about a lot of things.
Yeah, and San Francisco is very similar to Santa Cruz in that San Francisco is the smallest geographic county in the state, whereas Santa Cruz is the second smallest.
Oh, okay.
Very interesting, with three or four times the population. And, of course, you're only one water department, where Santa Cruz and Monterey probably have 20.
Right. You and I have sort of crossed paths on and off over the last 30 or something years, at least. But we've never actually met, and we were going to meet this time. You were disappointed, and so was I, that I'm going to be doing the program from KSCO North, a remote location. But anyhow, here we are. Now, I'm going to describe you throughout the program as a concerned citizen, but you probably have a better description of yourself than that, right?
I am.
Regarding the water and the desal and everything, you've been a guy who's been quite politically active when it comes to water and seawater intrusion and you know, one particular berry producer, you know, taking an inordinate amount of water, you know.
My thesis is that we have exceeded what is a reasonable agricultural carrying capacity for our whole Monterey Bay region. The Monterey Bay region, perhaps unique in the world with approaching a $5 billion agricultural production, is entirely water isolated from the rest of the world in California. We use basically our own groundwater. And in the biggest basin here, which is the Salinas Valley, around over 4 billion production, and the Pajaro Valley, which is shared by Soquel Creek and the Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency, one of the major aquifer there, the Aromas Red Sands. So
yes.
Those two aquifers they don't sustain because actually they've both been pumped down and irretrievably ruined and created a food security problem here, actually, and for the whole world since we're such a major producer. But I'm getting ahead of myself. But I would characterize myself as the biggest loser in the history of Santa Cruz politics. I'm running for supervisor for the sixth time, but that's not surprising. Because, you see, I'm trying to do something that the Christian Lord Jesus has never attempted, not taking any money, which is running on water. So I've had bad luck at that so far.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
All right. So this program is primarily to discuss desal. And, in a nutshell, I mean, I would think a guy like you would be very much in favor of desal. Am I right or am I wrong?
I'm in favor of having a diversified water portfolio for the whole Monterey Bay region to make sure that all areas of our economy and people here have access to reasonably priced, sustainable local water. So because we've overused our water agriculturally, they're using 85% of the water. So that's what I'm in favor for. If that means having one regional desal plant for the 660,000 people here, maybe that's not a bad idea. But we're talking about four different proposals that I'm aware of. But we're going to have a desal expert on here who's going to know all about the pros and cons of those. But we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars and competing agencies. So I'm in favor of a coordinated regional water management, which might include desal in that portfolio of water resources. Should I put that down as a possibly instead of a yes or a no? But let me say this too, as a corollary comment to that, is that the first thing you said about desal being very expensive is good. And you, I know Michael Olson just left here and said something you're saying. Cheap food isn't number one. Okay, so the number one rule with water, other than postulating we can't print up anymore, is to follow the money.
That's a good postulate for anything.
Well, when you're talking about $500 million or more in desal plants on four different ones, and you're talking about different possible felonies in Monterey, and
what? I should have done more research for this program that I did. I know there's some controversial, at least two controversial plants that are proposed. One in Santa Cruz and one in Moss Landing.
No, three different ones in Moss.
There's three different ones. Yes. There three different ones at Moss Landing?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, anyhow. We will discuss
area.
That. Let me go ahead and introduce the person that you alluded to. That would be Dr. Jason Holt, who is Chief Technology Officer of NanoAsys, a Richmond, California-based startup company developing next-generation desal membranes. Hey, welcome to KSCO, Jason.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, yeah. So, you've been doing this a while, huh?
Yeah.
Your PhD is in what?
Chemical engineering.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And at what point did you decide that you wanted to zero in and become an expert on desal?
It was probably about 2004, 2005. Before starting my company, I was a staff scientist at Lawrence Livermore Labs, and started getting interested in water at that time because of an interesting technology that we were working on involving carbon nanotubes.
Are you seeing, I'm assuming that you're seeing a future in much less expensive desal processes, right?
Certainly, yeah. I mean, as you alluded to in the promo, what has prevented more widespread development of desalination plants has been the cost and energy cost being foremost among those. Traditional desalination by what's called reverse osmosis has usually required tremendous amounts of energy because, as some of your listeners may know, what you're doing with reverse osmosis is trying to force water through a dense sheet of plastic, essentially, which needs to be really dense to prevent the salt from going through. And that it works very well at preventing salt from going through, but to get any appreciable amount of water through there, you need huge pressures, you know, on the order of 50 atmospheres of pressure.
Ooh.
To get any significant water through there. So that entails huge costs.
That means we're at roughly one atmosphere of pressure, right, at sea level, yes?
Right.
So we're talking about 50 times that pressure to be forced through a membrane to trap the salt, you know, sodium chloride and other chemicals, I guess.
Yeah.
To freshen the water.
Right.
50 times. My gosh, that's incredible. I mean, how is that ever even possible?
Well, if you ever see aerial, you know, views of desalination plants, they have a huge footprint, and you know, that's part of the reason you need huge pumps that are capable of generating those kinds of pressures to extract any, you know, appreciable amount of water from these membranes.
Okay.
So that's one of the kind of pain points that we've tried to work on with our technology.
Right. Hey, I received this email about an hour ago. Hello, Michael. This is from, I'm Jerry Paul from EWA Engineers for Water Alternatives, a non-political organization of some 10 academic and commercial professionals in engineering, geology, and hydrology, assisting Santa Cruz County water agencies and citizens as a public service in the thorough evaluation of water supply and management alternatives, including desalination, with a value for feasibility, cost, environmental impact, and long-term sustainability. He heard that we're going to be doing this program today and sent me this email, and I gave him a call immediately, connected with him, and encouraged him to call, which he has done. Let's welcome Jerry to the KSCO Saturday special. Jerry, welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hello, Michael. And
how do you do?
Mr. Deitch and Dr. Holt.
Yeah, Dr. Holt here. And you said something on the phone to me. You said a couple things that you said would knock my socks off. And my socks were at least semi-knocked off. And I invited you to call and share that. Now, I know you've got some other things that you have scheduled, but it's great that you're here, and we wanted to put you on toward the beginning of the program. So why don't you share with our audience your take on all this, because you're not necessarily a DSAL guy, or are you?
I'm in favor of objective study, as the EWA is. In fact, I want to say right now, I do not represent EWA. They jealously guard their objectivity, and I'm in danger of being an advocate of some sort on this program. So please regard these as my opinions and not theirs.
Okay.
I found it odd that a number of things weren't mentioned by the city in Santa Cruz's proposition of desalination.
Tell us real quickly what that is, okay? And I apologize. I should have had that information for our listeners, but you do it. Just in a nutshell, please.
They didn't say in the hours of TV and meetings that I watched how much water there was.
Well, first of all, what is proposed? Is it something on the north coast, a desal plant there or something?
It's proposed that on the west side of Santa Cruz, a desalination plant would be put in, and that its brine discharge would be mixed with the treated sewage and put into the ocean at roughly the same brininess as the water that came out of the ocean.
Okay, and where would this physically be located? You said it's in West Santa Cruz. Where, West Coast Drive area or something?
I'm not sure exactly. I think it's north of Natural Bridges.
Okay.
Park. It's you know, fairly on the west side.
Got it. Okay. And I know that there is some controversy attached to that. I'm sure we're going to be doing more programs on that. But I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
At any rate, I looked into how much water there was. And in order to make it simple for your listeners, I would like to talk about the 2,790 acre-feet that the desalination plant can put out in a year at 100% capacity, and just call that one desal, that volume of water, one desal. And the San Lorenzo River unimpeded flow is about 34 desals over the course of an average year. And if you add in the unimpeded flow of nearby streams, it comes out 44 desal. In other words, 44 times the amount of water that the desalination plant could produce. Now, Santa Cruz only uses 4 desal. In other words, 90% of the water that flows out of our streams goes right through our fingers and escapes us out to sea. And there's 40 desals worth of water that we have yet to, appropriate. By the way, there's some technical terms. They call it divert. You know, when humans take water out of a stream.
Okay, so what you're saying is that we should take, before we spend money on expensive and untested desal plants, maybe we ought to harness what we have that's flowing through our fingers right now.
It's worth really studying. I believe those who proposed the desalination plant, the Zeno City Council, has a fiduciary responsibility to prove that the 25 or so alternatives to desalination are not as good.
Uh-huh.
And I believe that if you look at the 4 criteria, how much water is achieved, how much cost does it take, how much energy is spent, and what's the environmental impact, it seems very likely at this phase of study that quite a few water alternatives really beat desal a lot. By a large margin in every one of those categories.
All right. Okay, Doug, what do you have to say what Jerry said?
Well, may I ask first, Jerry, please call me Doug. Where do you live?
Santa Cruz.
Oh, you live in Santa Cruz. Okay, yeah, that has been studied, and the problem with that is there's no place to store that. And let me and also let me respond too that the whole reason we're having the show on desal today and considering desal in the first instance at all is because the supervisors in the county of both Monterey and Santa Cruz, and particularly Santa Cruz, because Gary Patton passed a specific law here, requires the Board of Supervisors to declare a groundwater emergency since 1998 officially, in which case we would have been properly managing our groundwater here where we live in a rainforest, almost, instead of depleting it and now be talking.
I never heard that before.
You know, the San Lorenzo Valley, where the it's huge rainfall in there. So, Mr. Paul or Jerry, it's the storage of that water. Now, when people, too, talk about, you know, recharge, there's no possibility to recharge anything when you're overpumping the groundwater at the same time 200% for basically now a berry crop, which is exported, causing, well, for example, this one desal plant that you're talking about started out at $42 million, now it's $120 million. The groundwater loss in the Aromas Red Sands aquifer that Soquel Creek uses for one-third of its supply is, they said, 15,000 acre feet. They are losing they're exporting five desal plants in strawberries every year from the groundwater totally taking it, and we're going to build one to compensate for this. Let me read something that's very telling here about the desal plant. This is a major rationale in support of the Santa Cruz desal plant, and here it is. This is a statement from Soquel Creek Water District and SCMU by Bill Coker and Laura Brown. Quote, by supplementing groundwater supplies with desalination, the district will be able to limit groundwater pumping to within the sustainable yield and prevent seawater intrusion from contaminating the aquifers, plural. So what they're saying there is, since 2009, is that the desal plant is going to stop the saltwater intrusion in the Aromas Red Sands that's losing 5 desal plants a year. So, no, there's no due diligence going on here. But specifically what Jerry's saying is, we don't have any type of storage for that massive amount of water, which is true, that goes down the San Lorenzo River. That's why the city of Santa Cruz depends on that, because they can put that up in Loch Lomond. Anyways, I don't want to dominate the time here, but that would be
Well, no, I think it, you know, it's a complicated subject, and it takes time, and I appreciate you taking the time. I've got no problem with that. In fact, I agree with you that aquifers are being mined.
Exactly.
It's a serious problem. You know, we're starting to lose wells, coastal wells, due to saline incursion. And when I looked at the storage problem and put it in terms of desals, you know, normalized it to 2,790 acre feet, I found that there's some 20 to 90 desals of storage capability, if it were to be developed, around the Santa Cruz area. Specifically, there are three quarries, the Cemex, the Hanson, and the Olympia quarries. Cemex is near Davenport. Hanson and Olympia straddle Mount Hermon Road between Felton and Scotts Valley. And then there's, of course, Loch Lomond, our 3 desal reservoir/lake up near Zianti. And then there are specifically the 2 aquifers, one under Scotts Valley, Santa Margarita, and the other, as you pointed out, under the Soquel, Aptos, Capitola, Live Oak area, the Purisma. And those aquifers are storage facilities.
But not with the type of scale that we're talking about for our regional water problem, which is you're only addressing a Santa Cruz Soquel desal plant, which is really one desal plant. The one they're talking about doing regionally, the 3 competing are 4 or 5 Santa Cruz desal plants. That's why I advocate joining into a water regional agency, which would have one desal plant. You see, they're under court orders down there to stop all pumping in the Carmel Valley.
In
that part of the county. So by 2016, they have to have a solution unless they can get an extension. We're under demand we're under now is to keep all these people employed. I wish some listener now would do this bit of research. Go to SantaCruzSentinel.com, look at the City of Santa Cruz database, and tell us how many six-figured water employees there are in the City of Santa Cruz water department. It starts off with Bill Coker at the top with $180,000, and I was amazed at how many there were. This is really important. Santa Cruz derives a huge amount of their money from what? The utility tax. So if you got a $120 million desal plant and you got to pay for that, that's going to all go in your utility bill. So this is a really good cash cow.
Oh, my God.
You know, so...
I never thought about that.
I would beg to differ,
Michael,
on that.
What?
I believe that if you take the... Whether it's 115 or 140 million, I won't quibble. But they're talking about adding about a $10 million so-called renewable energy source. If you take that, the financed cost of that, it turns out more like 180 million plus or minus 20, depending on what the interest rates are, et cetera. And if you divide that by the number of adults in the area served by desalination, which in this case is Santa Cruz and Soquel Water District, Soquel Creek, that comes out $3,000 per adult over and above their regular water bill. That's a big hunk. And the citizenry may not let it happen. In fact, the water alternatives may be the only thing politically that is passable in this particular area. Now, I have no quibble with you about other parts of Monterey Bay that have different situations.
I want to break in and ask Jason Holt here some questions, some technical questions and some cost questions about desal, because he's got more experience than all of us put together and a lot more, I'm sure. So, Jason, you heard the promo. I like to go on cruises, and they always have lots of, you know, wonderful fresh water, and I always wondered how that happened. And I asked about it, and they said, well, we got onboard desal plants.
Right.
On every cruise ship. So it's cost effective for that, but I guess that's because people are spending hundreds or thousands of dollars to go on their cruise.
Yeah, certainly.
Where are there cost effective desal plants operating? Are there any in the United States, or are they all in Saudi Arabia where there's plenty of money from oil?
I mean, they're predominantly in the Middle East. There is one plant that is soon to go online, which is going to be the largest reverse osmosis desal plant in the U.S. in San Diego, down in Carlsbad. I think it's going to be a 50 million gallon per day facility. But by comparison with one of the large plants in Israel, Ashkelon, and another one in Saudi Arabia, Jubail, those were much more economical, at least from a dollar per gallon per day productivity.
Why are they more economical than the one? Was there some corruption going on and people crossing palms here in this country that didn't happen over there?
Potentially. I know the Carlsbad facility was something like 10 years in the planning process and going through the state permitting process. You know, there's a lot of additional hurdles you have to go through here that, you know, it's in many ways in the Middle East where there's an even more urgent and more urgent need is felt for water, the process is necessarily more streamlined. You know, the Ashkelon plant that I mentioned in Israel, I think is probably, for a plant of its scale, was relatively low in cost. I think it was something like $200 million to build, and it's a 100 million gallon per day facility. So something that provides about, I think it's like 13 to 15% of the total water needs of the entire country.
Of Israel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It'll be interesting to see what happens with this Carlsbad thing, huh?
Yeah, I think they're right now they're negotiating rates for the water. So, you know, my understanding is that everything is built. They're in the final stages now. And I think as of like April, they were discussing with the San Diego Water Authority.
What do you think about what Jerry said? Jerry is alluding to the fact that, you know, there's so much, you know, water from the San Lorenzo River and other streams and sources that are getting away from us now that could be collected, not have to involve any kind of, go through the traditional plants. Which,
oh, yeah.
I mean, so, if that's true, do you think that's true, number one? And if it is, well, just let me...
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't appreciate the subtleties of the, you know, water issues in Santa Cruz, not being a resident there. But I can say, you know, water is very much a local issue. And, you know, even though I'm a advocate for desalination in general, it's not always the right solution. In the Middle East, where there are few other alternatives, you know, it makes sense there. And that's why it's as widely deployed as it is. But yeah, you know, Santa Cruz is certainly not as arid as the Middle East, and it appears to me, from what little I know, there may be better water management solutions there.
All right, before Jerry has to leave, I want to know what he wants to happen.
I would like a fair study. Right now, the Santa Cruz City Council has spent $14 million studying desal. Studying 25 alternatives will cost about $2 million. I asked John Ricker, the county water director, how much he needed to do what they call 10% designs, so that they could cost out and vet the leading water alternatives, especially the ones recommended by Kennedy Jenks, the 500-pound gorillas of engineering from out of San Francisco. And he said $2 million. We'll do it. And right now, as of August, there's an EIR, Environmental Impact Report, that's going to be drafted. And I believe that studying the alternatives needs to be done for a fair assessment of whether desal is the best alternative for the environment.
So your beef is with Politico is just automatically assuming that we need desal when we might not, basically.
Well, how can I say? I'm not angry. I just I encourage objectivity and full disclosure. And there's some highly professional opinion that says we've got some better calls. For instance, Jason referred to earlier, any amount of water that's desalinated, at least in Santa Cruz with the plant they're proposing, which is going to use 13.7 gigawatt-hours, in other words, billion watt-hours per year, that's an amount of energy that could lift that same water 4,800 feet into the air. That's how much energy it is, 4,800 feet, you know, the weight of water.
Yeah.
You lift the water up in the air 4,800 feet. And I say that because then you can compare it to other water projects. Like, for instance, if we were going to lift water from Felton to the Scotts Valley Aquifer, that's 280 feet up. So you could do that 17 times. In other words, the energy of desal is 17 times more than that lift. Now, there might be some pipeline losses. If you use big pipeline, 24-inch pipeline, there'd be about 1 PSI per mile. You know, it's like nothing at all. But pipeline costs $1 million a mile, roughly. So a desal is $180 million.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's like not even close. So, and then if you store the water in Scotts Valley Aquifer, it comes back underground to the rivers, increasing base flow. It's like storing it for 6 months from winter to summer, so that in the summer when the fish really need it, when the river's running dry, it's coming back out of the aquifer into the river for the fish. So it's wonderful environmentally. It kills two birds with one stone. And of course, in the case of Soquel, it holds back the ocean to store it in their aquifer. And they can also pump their wells, say, in the summer. We can fill them up in the winter so they don't use their wells. And their aquifer fills up. And then they can give us some portion, not the whole thing, but some portion of the water back in the summer, so we don't have to draw it out of San Lorenzo River. It's a two birds for one stone proposition to store in aquifers, which underground are biology free. You know, you don't have any critters or leaves or anything in the water.
There's a question of capacity, though, right, that Doug raised earlier. I mean, I don't know what the scale that we're talking about. Certainly from an energy standpoint, what you say makes sense. But does the capacity exist to store in these aquifers to meet the water needs of the area?
That's a very good question.
I can address that.
The $2 million can help determine that number reliably.
I can save us some money. Should I continue?
Sure.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Sure.
I'm sorry to interrupt. These are good points, Jerry. But the real capacity that we're talking about would only potentially exist in this Aromas Red Sands aquifer that goes from Rio del Mar and Soquel Creek through north, mostly in Monterey County. This is the aquifer that is losing in resource 15,000 acre feet a year. Mark Reisner, late Mark Reisner, who wrote Cadillac Desert, when he was here in 1998, in answer to a question of mine, characterized this loss as the worst in the world. They lose 5 desal plants a year. So I have some testimony I'd like to read you from a 2008 Soquel Creek Water District meeting between Bruce Daniels, who used to be on the Regional Water Quality Control Board, and Dr. Andy Fisher, who is a UC expert on groundwater around here. And by the way, the fifth biggest revenue generator for the whole University of California is the $5 million strawberry royalty they get, mostly out of the Pajaro Valley, but that's another matter. Jason, it's very interesting at Lawrence Livermore Laboratory, because then you can tell us all about URS Corporation, who manages Lawrence Livermore Laboratory for the University of California, who has been selected as the environmental consultant to determine whether or not this desal plant is a good idea here. Anyway, here's the testimony. Soquel Creek Water District Board, May 20, 2008. County hydrologist, Cloud. You got a lot of empty storage space, Dr. Fisher. I know. Cloud, in Aromas. Dr. Fisher, we do. Cloud, you don't have a lot of empty storage over there in the Parisma, but tons of space over in the Aromas. Fisher, right, too. Cloud, which means when I look at the wells, when I look at the well logs, that drilled on the Aromas Red Sands area, some people are going down 400 or 500 feet, still in dry sand. Fisher, right. Just barely above sea level. Fisher, wow. Cloud, but there's no reason why it should be dry because, you know, the stream valleys don't cut down deep enough to reach the water table for it to drain out. Fisher, right. Cloud, so it suggests that there's another mechanism keeping the water level from building up. Almost inaudible. The Pajaro Valley, enthusiastic 5 seconds of laughter, ! Twice, unknown. Go farmers. Daniels, this is a former regional water quality member who's now got his doctorate up at UC for... Anyway, we can get into that later. Daniels, that is an issue, is that you could recharge the Aromas and end up, you know, basically putting it right down the toilet. Unknown voice. I got to get that. Inaudible, several voices. Fisher, quote, one person's duster is another person's opportunity. So that's the potential of the Aromas Red Sands Aquifer. It's characterized by the head groundwater expert here as a duster, which in my mind means that it's a... shot.
How many agencies are there that concern themselves with water in the Monterey Bay region?
Are you asking me that question?
Yeah, anybody who knows the answer.
I can tell you that there's one for the 860,000 people in the city and county in San Francisco, which includes Hetch Hetchy, a huge... I can mention Soquel Creek Water District, Central Water, San Andreas Water, maybe four, or PVWMA. Here's something interesting about PVWMA. The Farm Bureau...
Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency.
The Farm Bureau appoints, of Monterey and Santa Cruz County, appoint 3 of the 7 members there. The representative for the county of Monterey, 410,000 people. Watsonville, 50,000 people. In Santa Cruz, 250,000. Those members who sit on that board are appointed by the head of the Farm Bureau. And then 1,500 votes in the outlying areas outside of Watsonville wins a seat. That's why in the last 30 years since that agency was formed, it has experienced, according to Mark Reisner, 15,000 acre-foot resource loss. And that's caused by 200% overdraft and a 45,000-foot overdraft.
Well, you have all these facts and figures, Doug. What does that translate into? I don't like that agency at all. I'm not talking about the people in it. The people are fine. The people in the office. I think that agency should be eliminated.
It's failed.
It's not only because it's failed, because it's useless.
Well,
it's an absolutely useless, repetitive, duplicative. All it exists to do is send bills to people to pay, and that have been challenged and have in court actions and have been declared, you know, unconstitutional or illegal or whatever, and they still keep sending the bills. They have the audacity to keep doing that.
Well, that's small potatoes. That agency is part of the domination that agribusiness has, multinational agribusiness, not one firm, but that the system here has over our water supply. What we have to do here is to have one regional water agency and put the people back in control of our water.
Right.
One agency.
Okay. All right. Listen, now you're listening to the KSCO Saturday special, hour number one thereof. We're talking about water and desalinization in particular. There's a lot of things wrapped up into this issue here. We are going to take a commercial break now. I was curious about how long the break is without the promos here, but let's just go ahead and do it. It's your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO. We'll be back with more on this topic right after this commercial break, so please stay with us.
It's time to paint the house, and who? Walls Painting. Why? Because Walls knows walls. Locally owned Walls Painting is fully licensed, bonded, and insured, and has been painting Central Coast homes and businesses for over three decades, and is the Good Times Best of winner 2 years running.
Hello, I'm Jim Harmon, president of Walls Painting. We are committed to starting and finishing projects on time, to maintaining a clean, safe, and ecologically friendly environment, and we are committed to excellence in our workmanship.
Get the most from your painting dollar. Call on Walls Painting, a proud member of Think Local First, 831-425-3622, 425-3622, or wallspainting.com. Call Walls right now and get a free color consultation from a real designer and $500 off any complete exterior or interior color job, 425-3622.
And remember, Walls knows walls.
Hi, I'm Andy, the produce manager at Benelman Market. Check out our great selection of fresh produce. This week we are featuring California large ripe avocados, 4 for $5. Great for that homemade guacamole. From Mexico we have Roma tomatoes, 77 cents a pound. Fresh jicama, 49 cents a pound. Large cucumbers, 37 cents each. And ripe mangoes, 59 cents each. We just picked up a fresh shipment of jumbo artichokes. These local-grown beauties are only 2 for $4. In organics, we are featuring California asparagus, $3.99 a pound, California sweet baby broccoli, $2.49 a bunch, Kaz avocados, 2 for $3. So come check out our great selection of fresh produce and many weekend specials at Ben Lomond Market and Scotts Valley Markets.
There have been some epic competitions through the centuries. David versus Goliath, Beta versus VHS. But the big one this year is the John Deere Gator versus your expectations. That's because the Gator XUV 825i engine includes 3 cylinders of dual overhead cams and 50 horsepower. Gator versus your expectations? We win this one going away. Stop into RDO Equipment Company, your local John Deere dealer today, or visit them on the web at rdoequipment.com for the location nearest you. It's always a good time to get off the grid, so make it happen today on the John Deere Gator XUV 550S4 with room for 4. The 550S4 starts at just $9,299. There's even special deer season financing available now. Get to RDO Equipment Company, your local John Deere dealer, by July 31st and get out there. Visit them on the web at rdoequipment.com for the location nearest you.
Okay, everyone, we have a major announcement. My mom's book of some of her best commentaries over the past dozen plus years is now available under a new pricing schedule that will be conducive to more sales, which will translate into more revenue for your favorite independent radio station, so we will be able to create even more stellar original programming and stimulation than we already put out. Impossible, you say? Just watch us or listen to us. And don't forget, Kay's book makes an excellent gift for anyone. Stock up on them and never have to stress about the perfect gift for someone ever again. There's a reason that Kay is more popular on KSCO than even Rush. She's brilliant, as well as logical and right on. Solve the gift-giving problems, help KSCO get even better, and make the world smarter all at the same time. Buy Kay's book at KSCO.com or at KSCO Studios on Portola Drive during business hours. $25 for the first one, $15 for each book after that. I'll say it again. $25 for the first book, $15 for each book after that. Come to KSCO Studios Saturdays during the Saturday special, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, to meet Kay and have her inscribe your books.
And Kay is there right now, so it will be at least till the end of the show, probably another half hour, hour after that. So come on down to 2300 Portola Drive and get your copy or copies. Great gifts for KSCO. I'm Kay Swirling. Okay, back to our discussion here. Yeah, I've got a bee in my bonnet about the Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency. Probably just because I get bills from them every year, and they don't do anything. Their whole function is to put bills in the mail to me and demand that I pay it. And I'd like to see that agency, that quasi agency, shut down. And from my discussions with you, Doug Deitch, there are a lot of superfluous water management agencies that should be shut down, huh?
I would call them replicative heritage water fiefdoms. What particularly galls one about the Pajaro agency, of which I'm not in, nor in Soquel Creek, is that people are charged water for pumping water out of their own well.
Yeah, so that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know.
You know, I have my own well. It's not connected to anybody else, and I have to pay this agency. I basically told them to go bleep themselves, and they scared me into thinking that they're going to take my house by leaning my property.
If I don't pay their
$72 annual extortion.
And so that's, they charge you are people a flat rate? I think it might be $150 an acre foot. Jason, you're still there, right?
Yes.
But could you give us kind of a, because as I said, I'm not categorically, you know, against detail, but like, for example, what I'm looking at here is an estimation of water per acre foot desal cost that was just issued by the Division of Ratepayers. The desal plant down Monterey was, they said, around $4,000 an acre foot, and you're pumping maybe $150, Michael, out of the ground for your own water, but they talked about $7,000 to $7,900 per acre foot. Can you give us an idea what kind of costs you can achieve with your new technology?
Oh, what a great question.
Yeah, the raw numbers are a little bit difficult to quote, because I use different units typically, but you know, in dollars per, think of it in dollars per cubic meter. But the on a percentage basis, the technology that we're working on promises to give, you know, as much as 30% energy savings for a typical reverse osmosis plant. And energy or electricity is a significant portion of the ongoing operating costs of a desalination plant. I think probably as much as 40 to 50%. So that's the technology that we're developing promises to make these plants significantly more more cost effective. And another use of our technology, this is more of a kind of a next generation application, is to reduce the footprint of desalination plants. If you could keep the capacity the same and reduce the footprint by, you know, one fifth, you know, your total capital costs for building these plants can, you know, drop proportionately. So that's kind of the long-term vision of what we're what we're working on.
And guess what? It's time to open the phone lines. I just realized there have been some people who have called in. There was a gentleman from Santa Cruz, I believe. I forgot his name, who wanted to talk about water storage. He's since hung up. I guess he got tired of waiting here. But we had not opened the phone lines. Now we are. Give us a call at 479-1080 in area 831 if you want to join the discussion about water and desal in particular.
May I add something to what Jason just said? Thank you, Jason, for that information. Now, the technology, I mentioned there are four different plants being considered here regionally. The technology for one, I believe, stands out from the others. It's called the Deep Water Desal Project down
right.
And this one, when Jason is talking about cost and energy, it's about cleaning the water, basically. But when you start out with water that's cleaner in the first place, which is deep water technology is talking about, and also they have lines for energy lines for – I'm just giving this as an example – you know, to address the energy use, have a contract, and also Dr. Griggs at Long Marine Lab seems to be supportive of this. So that's what these energy costs are involved with. So you start out with cleaner water. So there's other technologies
right.
besides. You know, I'm sure Jason knows all about them. I don't know much about desal. I just know what I don't know, which is quite a bit.
Yeah, the deep water has a, you know, the problem there is that there are very few regions, you know, very few coastlines that allow for extraction of water in that way, and I guess that area near Moss Landing is maybe one of the exceptions.
It's called the Grand Canyon of the Monterey Bay. That's why it's so deep.
Yeah. So it's deep enough, but it's also part of the Monterey Bay Marine Sanctuary, right? So you're probably not allowed to do anything there.
But the Coastal Commission can help us with that, and I'm hoping to get appointed to that after I'm elected supervisor, Michael.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, one of the nice features of deep water, you know, if it's implemented correctly, is that the impact on marine life can be, you know, mitigated significantly relative
All
to
right.
typical nearshore desalination.
Great. So. Well, let's go to the phone lines here. Take our first call, Ed in Santa Cruz, about water here. And by the way, the phone number is 479-1080. Give us a call. Ed, you're on the air.
Well, Michael, I got to congratulate you because you're going to fix in a two-hour program something that's had thousands of hours of conversation and hasn't been fixed yet. So
we are going to fix it.
You're going to get it done in 1 hour.
An hour and 4 minutes to fix
but,
it here.
But I just want to characterize some of the problems. If you look at the Santa Cruz water problem with its full reservoir, the reservoir is filled right now.
Yeah,
and it's filled probably 10 out of 11 years or at least
what are you talking about? Are you talking about Loch Lomond?
That's right.
Okay. But now what about Bay Street Reservoir?
Well, they took it apart and put back about one-third the capacity, which is not a great idea, but that's what they said was the smartest engineering thing to do.
That's because the roof was going to collapse because of negligent maintenance.
Oh. Well, that's because they put a cheap roof on in the first place that never would last more than 15 years or something like that. But, you know, it's just a microcosm. As Doug correctly stated, there's a zillion water districts, and then there's all the wells of Michael. Michael, you're not the only one. Other people have wells, and every one of those is like a little water agency. And Doug didn't even mention the whole Monterey thing. I assume you're going to include Monterey and Monterey Bay Water District that you want.
Absolutely.
But they have this thing called Cal-Am, a German-owned company that owns their whole water production apparatus.
They got bought out by Flo. They owned the Felton Water Company, too, but they were eliminated.
Well, that happened.
How were they eliminated?
By public action, by initiative.
Oh.
And that was one of the smartest things that could ever happen. But all across the country, there's foreign companies, not United States companies, that are taking over little water districts. And the first thing they did down in Monterey was raise the water rate 78%.
Yeah, that's what they do. And the people down there took it. And the people up here in Felton didn't take it.
That's right. So, Michael, it's a mirror of what you talked about in the Pajaro District, where the Monterey Peninsula Water Management District doesn't own anything. All they do is send bills. And Cal-Am owns the water production apparatus.
They commit felonies down there, too, maybe, because they're having they're determining that now, too. So we'll have to see.
Well, there's all kinds of problems. So not only is there a little bag of snakes up here at this end of the bay, there's a bag of snakes twice as big down there. And, Doug, I just have to give you a Don Quixote Award because in your lifetime you're planning to piece this all together into a single water district.
I'd like to be the Mulholland of the Monterey Bay. He said, there it is, take it. when he opened that pipeline, when he stole all the water from the Owens Valley. My proposition is, there it is, take it. And it's how we can go about living within our means here, being gentle with the earth, and being the global exemplar.
It's a wonderful idea, Doug. But you know what? In your lifetime, you think that you're going to get all these, let's say, 1,000 agencies to talk to each other? I wish you
Godspeed. We better.
Not 1,000 agencies.
Well, when you count all the individual wells, it sure is.
Right.
Not without your help.
Well, Ed, I wish to thank you for your most thoughtful and cogent call to the Saturday special. Jan in San Lorenzo Valley is up next, but I see where the alligator is going to get us for CBS News at the top of the hour. It's your favorite radio station, hour number one, coming into hour number two of the Saturday special, right here on KSCO, Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, San Jose. It's 11 a.m. Here is CBS News.
CBS News, I'm Sharon Middleman. One day before the beginning of a 60-nation summit of NATO countries in Chicago, three activists are charged with terrorism. State's Attorney Anita Alvarez.
The individuals that we have charged in this investigation are not peaceful protesters. They are domestic terrorists who came to Chicago with an anarchist agenda to harm our police officers, intimidate our citizens, and to attack their politically motivated targets.
Well, security is very heavy in Chicago because of the NATO summit, and topping the agenda at the NATO meeting, security around the world.
President Obama and the other leaders will discuss the strategy to move all NATO combat troops out of Afghanistan by the end of 2014. CBS News military analyst and retired Joint Chiefs Chairman Richard Myers says the in-together, out-together plan might not hold.
Some countries may say, you know, thank you very much. We've had enough of this. But I think the general NATO consensus will be to continue to support, pretty much in line with what President Obama outlined.
The U.S. plans to withdraw another 23,000 troops from Afghanistan by the end of September. Peter Mayer, CBS News, Chicago.
Well, today, President Obama is playing host to the leaders of the world's industrialized countries. The G8 summit is taking place at Camp David outside Washington.
So far, so good. We got more work to do.
The G8 leaders are talking about the country's economies, security challenges in Iran, Syria, and North Korea, and the war in Afghanistan.
My hope is that coming out of this meeting, we are going to be able to then each of us have assignments that we have to execute and that we can report back to the next G8 summit.
Cemetery today, 200 buglers from across the country played taps in unison. It's to commemorate the 150th anniversary of the first sounding of taps. Funeral services were held today for Mary Kennedy in suburban New York. She's the estranged wife of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. WCBS TV's Ann Marcogliano is there.
Members of the Kennedy family at the service included Maria Shriver, Robert Kennedy Jr., also Ethel Kennedy, all in attendance. Also, celebrities here, Larry David, Susan Sarandon, Dan Aykroyd, Chevy Chase, and John McEnroe. Three of Mary Kennedy's older children and one of her sisters carried her casket inside the church.
Mary Kennedy was found dead earlier this week of an apparent suicide.
2-1-0, and liftoff. We've had a cutoff.
Talk about a last-minute scrub. A private rocket, the SpaceX, was supposed to launch this morning for the International Space Station, but computers stopped the liftoff. The problem is possibly engine pressure. This is CBS News.
Summer celebrations are fast approaching, and with the Sherwin-Williams exterior stain sale, it's the perfect time to gear up for them. Through July 8th, Deckscape's deck stains are only $29.99 per gallon, and save on power washer rentals where available. Now you can clean, prep, stain, and seal your deck all in one day, with plenty of money left over to throw a great party on it. Woodscape sunning stains are also on sale for just $31.99 a gallon. Get your stain project started today at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store, or visit sherwinwilliams.com/deck.
Now you can dial a diamond and save half by calling Empire Diamond at 1-800-SAVE-HALF. Over 70 years in the Empire State Building, they'll sell diamonds wholesale without a middleman's markup. That's right, GIA-graded diamonds at half the price of famous high-end jewelers. Qualified buyers may have diamonds into their home or office for a free 10-day no-obligation inspection and get a 60-day money-back guarantee. So save half on your diamonds. Visit at dialadiamond.com or call 1-800-SAVE-HALF. That's 1-800-SAVE-HALF.
Lady Gaga is getting a not-so-friendly reception in the Philippines. Protesters in Manila say the entertainer's lyrics and costumes are offensive.
They prayed.
Sa pangalan ni Cristo Jesus. Amen.
And they chanted.
Stop Lady Gaga concert!
Hundreds of Filipino Christians took to the streets to ask Lady Gaga to tone down her performances in her upcoming concerts in Manila, saying some of her songs border on blasphemy and threatening to file charges against concert organizers if she doesn't.
It is sensual. It is very, very obscene.
This after Lady Gaga was forced to cancel her concert in Indonesia due to pressure from Islamic hardliners. Barnaby Lowe, CBS News, Manila.
Well, the second leg of racing's Triple Crown runs tonight in Baltimore, the 137th Preakness. Kentucky Derby winner I'll Have Another is bidding for a chance at the Triple Crown, but the horse that's favored to win is Bodemeister, who was edged out of victory at the Derby after holding a strong lead. I'm Sharon Middleman, CBS News.
This portion of programming on KSCO is brought to you in part by RV Service Center of Santa Cruz, your locally owned RV parts and repair center in Santa Cruz. RV Service Center specializes in all RV insurance repairs and now offers service rebates equal to your insurance deductible. It's like you pay nothing. At RV Service Center, 2525 Mission, Santa Cruz, a proud member of Think Local First.
Thank you, Bill, and thank you for keeping it tuned in to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz. It's 5 minutes after 11 a.m. here on this Saturday, May the 19th, 2012, my dad's birthday. Let's get a look at your Central Coast traffic and your Central Coast weather. 41st Avenue at Soquel Drive in the Capitola area. We have a hit and run reported there, CHP on the scene. And in the Hollister area, Anzar Road near Cannon Road, a stalled vehicle in the eastbound lane there. And crews are on their way to get that out of the roadway. 475-1080 is the number to call with your traffic tips. A look at your Central Coast weather shows partly cloudy skies. Highs in the lower 70s today. Lows in the upper 40s tonight, also partly cloudy, with lows in the low 40s and highs in the upper 60s. 66 degrees outside of KSCO Studios here in Santa Cruz. Coming up next on KSCO, we have hour number two of the Saturday special with your host, MZ.
The following is a KSCO commentary. Here is Kay's Whirling.
Isn't it interesting how our leader, Barack Hussein Obama, is holding on so desperately in wanting another 4 years after the dismal job he has done with this first term? Ego is a powerful motive in humans. Surely it was not restful and easy to deal with having to prove for the past 3.5 years that indeed he was born a true American. We now know it is a farce, and he does too, and so do his numerous lawyers. Our laws are being tampered with, and our Constitution has been diminished. What is in the heads of the American media who have covered for him constantly and refused to acknowledge his numerous mistakes and decisions? They know that another 4 years of his vacillating judgments will change our beautiful country, which our forefathers created. It will become a big socialist country. And now comes this issue of same-sex marriage. I would like to weigh in on it here, but first I respectfully suggest that if you do not believe in the existence of God, please do not continue to listen. It is God who created long, long ago that marriage is only between one man and one woman. And no matter how one wants to rationalize it, that fact is not negotiable. It has been between one man and one woman since the beginning of time. Now there are those humans who, for their own sexual comfort, are helping change this universal law, which God created, and it has been working very well for centuries. And if this new thinking prevails, I believe civilization will pay dearly. If we humans try to change that and include two men and two women, before long, it will be okay for brothers and sisters to marry. And even worse than that, God considers any union other than one man and one woman an abomination. Back to Obama. He wants to remain our president so badly that now he agrees that it is okay for same-sex marriages. How pathetic. He also cannot stand the thought of giving up his private airplane that he uses daily, probably even to go to Walgreens. Let's hope that logic and clear thinking will be with us when we go to the polls in November. Let us vote Obama out of office and let our beautiful capitalist country remain intact. For KSCO, this is Kay Swirling.
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but I'm sorry, baby, but I have to go. It's time for that wonderful record show. I'd love to visit, but you'll have to call back.
I do that from time to time, too. I blast that thing on so hot. I think I'm going to need an ear transplant after that one, though. Welcome to hour number two of the Saturday special.
I'm sorry, baby, but I really got to go to KSCO Radio. Bye.
Okay, now we're gonna switch gears and talk about gay marriage, same sex marriage for the forget the discussion about the water thing, right? Because that'll irritate too many people here. If you want to give us a call? It's 479-1080, and poor Jerry Paul has to go to an event with the king of water for all of Santa Cruz County, Bill Coker. And I thought he had to leave, but there's one more thing that he has to share with us here. So let's bring Jerry back on. Jerry, what did you want to share?
You didn't choose that Gotta Go music just for me now, did you?
Anyhow.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity.
Hey, you bet. Yeah, thanks for adding to the show. But why don't you say something that'll piss a bunch of people off, because that's what I like to do. There hasn't been enough of that on the show yet.
Okay.
Right?
Okay, sorry, Jason. I got to say two bad things and one good thing regarding your desalination. One is that in Santa Cruz, they are proposing to add a renewable energy source, some $10 million perhaps, to mitigate the costs of the energy that the desalination will consume. And so there's a tendency to conflate that source with desalination and say that, desalination doesn't take much energy. And the truth of the matter is that source is an independent item that energy could be used, say, for water alternatives. And it doesn't have to be used for desalination and should not be considered in the matter as to whether to adopt desalination, in my view. The second thing is normally money that you spend that goes from the baker to the banker to the doctor to the policeman, et cetera, circulates around the county largely. In the case of desalination, however, the construction companies big enough to do large water projects historically have been from outside the county, and the hardware for desalination tends to come from outside the county. And, of course, the bond market or the interest on the bonds for desalination is an international market, and so all that money leaves the county forever and doesn't circulate locally. So if you're a fan of buy local, desal ain't it. Now, I would like to say, hand Jason a softball here. I'm very interested in what membrane research is going to bring about and what it might bring in our time frame. to reduce energy consumption, you know, and increase efficiency of proposed desalination plants, which I believe are appropriate in many places on the. And with that, I'll say goodbye.
Bye bye. It was nice talking to you, Jerry. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. yeah. Responding to his question, I mean, there are a variety of other approaches out there that are sort of similar to ours. Trying to find ways of making those membranes that are used for reverse osmosis, which is one of the most common techniques for desalination, making that more efficient. There's some researchers in Denmark that are actually trying to use proteins that we have in our cell membranes. In fact, they're ubiquitous in all cells, using these aquaporin proteins to make, you know, next generation desalination membranes. And, you know, as is often the case, it's pretty hard to beat nature. These protein channels are extremely selective and allow water to flow through them at very high rates while preventing any salt from going through them. So, you know, but that's a concept that's a bit many years from being able to be deployed. Alternatively, there's some other techniques out there that are actually much closer to realization that don't involve membranes the way our techniques do. They involve using electrodes, essentially, techniques that are similar to what we use for some of our batteries, where you have these high surface area carbons, like activated carbon, as you have in many existing water filters. But if you apply a voltage to them, you can actually pull the salt out of the water, which, as it turns out, is a much easier thing to do from an energy point of view than to try to force water through a dense sheet of plastic. The issue with that voltage-based technique is that it's traditionally been hard to do at seawater salinities. These activated carbons get fouled pretty readily. But some colleagues of mine at Livermore Labs are actually working on a solution to that. So there's a whole portfolio of technologies out there. Researchers are have been working on to try to address that big pain point for desalination, which has been energy cost. Some of them are necessarily kind of small scale niche solutions, and there's other ones out there that can, you know, address the needs of large municipalities.
Hey, Jason, here's a crazy idea, but let me throw it out at you. I just thought of it. They have such things as on-demand water heaters. Could there be such thing as an efficient and effective on-demand desal plant for a house?
That's a good idea.
I think it's a great idea, and I will take all the credit for it because I just thought it up right now.
All right.
You know, and if this thing takes off, I might have enough money someday to really make KSCO a way better station and network than it already is.
Let's just keep it between us, though.
Okay, yeah. Actually, yeah, let's keep that a secret, okay? The audience will disregard my last great idea.
But may I ask Jason, what about the area of nanotechnology? Is there any type of possible application for desal for that?
Well, yeah. I mean, in fact, what we're working on at NanoAsis is a nanotechnology-enabled membrane. So just to describe it in brief, we're taking those existing membranes that are used for reverse osmosis, which I mentioned are like dense sheets of plastic, and essentially we're putting these carbon straws through that sheet of plastic. So you can think of it as creating a bunch of tiny holes in existing membranes. It turns out that there are these tubes, carbon nanotubes, which are basically just rolled sheets of graphite. They're about 50,000 times thinner than a human hair, and that's small enough that pipe can allow water to go through, but it prevents salt from going through. And so what we've worked on at NanoAsis is a way of incorporating those carbon nanotubes into existing membranes and polymers that are used for making conventional reverse osmosis membranes.
What a great name for a company, NanoAsys. Who came up with that? Did you?
Yeah, myself and another colleague when we were sitting over lunch years ago.
All right, hey, we got to go back to the phones, 479-1080 if you want to give us a call. We do have lines open. Love to hear from you on the Saturday special. Our next call will be Jan in San Lorenzo Valley. Thanks for waiting, Jan. You're on the air.
Oh, you're welcome, Michael. Great show. Hi to Doug and Dr. Holt and the other guy, and belated happy birthday to Kay. This is such a vital issue. The way I look at it is that we're like silly children who stand in the rain and cry that we don't have any water. And on one case, one of Kay's commentaries, she calls us stupid people. I think it was last week's. And we are stupid because if you go and stand by the San Lorenzo Valley River or any of the rivers in this area, all that water going down is fresh water. Now, up here in the San Lorenzo Valley, Boulder Creek, we get typically 65 to 120 inches of rain a year. All of that water flowing, gravity feeding down. The solution is containment. We need water tanks. We also need reservoirs and dams. And then if you picture the Monterey Bay, and you have dams and reservoirs above those mountains, not only does it give you water, gravity feeding down, but it would solve the salt water intrusion problem from the water pressure. Dr. Holt, I've agreed with, I think, everything you've said. Another point, Ben Lomond Dam, a study was done that 50% of the water, while the dam is up, goes into the aquifer. But they took the dam down. Bruce McPherson, I'm going to give him a plug because he wants to help us put that back. Now, on the consolidation of water districts, I'm against that. I don't think that's necessary. That would rob the people who have water like us and give Santa Cruz and other areas permission to take it and control our water.
Hey, what do you think of that, Doug?
If you go to see what my water plan involves, it involves, first of all, the amount of water we're talking about in the San Lorenzo River Valley is not to demean it, but it's inconsequential. You know, when I mentioned this flow acquisition, I think there are 13.
No, it's
in
not
terms of volume. It's not to you, but in terms of the whole area. But let me assure you.
Can I finish?
I just want to answer your question. That my water plan involves having Loch Lomond full all the time. Loch Lomond's around 9. It's the biggest above ground water storage in the whole region.
We need
region.
A lot more of
and that's
them,
right.
Doug.
No, well,
but
not in the San Lorenzo
River. Let me make this point about consolidation. I've been afraid of this for a long time. So Santa Cruz wants to get some of the San Lorenzo Valley water.
No, they don't. They wouldn't get it from San Lorenzo Valley, except for the Loch Lomond.
Well, I'm just saying, if it was consolidated and they had control, you know, it would be Santa Cruz County.
Well, you could be left out of the plan.
But still, they could take our water and enlarge UCSC. No, see, they're going to use that that we don't want, and for those students, they're taking away our property rights.
You see,
my last point, I'm sorry, I want to get this in. Michael, you have Knox Roofing, who has a wonderful way of designing a roof that can catch the rainwater and put it into tanks.
Right
from your roof. We don't need desal. We need to be smart.
And live within our means.
Yes, all that flowing down the rivers is fresh water. And you want us to let it flow into the ocean so that we can use a desal plant to take the salt out. We want to fool around with the ocean now? Any more than we have already?
Jan, you made me feel ashamed.
Well, Michael, I've been studying this for a long time.
But
thank you for the opportunity.
Okay.
Thank you, too.
All right, yeah, and Warren does. Warren Knox does one of his many inventions, you know, a water catch system. Anyhow, give us a call at 479-1080 in Area 831. If you want to shoot me an email, it's mz@ksco.com. I haven't received a single email. It's the first time that's happened in years on the Saturday special. By 11:23, I've usually gotten, you know, a bundle of emails. But I guess, I don't know, maybe people are just riveted to the program and they don't have any questions. I don't know.
Michael, may I say something about
yes.
that in specific response to what the last caller said?
Yes.
And it's this. She mentioned the growth of the University of California. Now, we'll see all the times about Gary Patton. I call it a contrived water scarcity growth control. There are very severe problems with traffic and housing with the University of California. But the 150 million gallons extra that the University of California, Gary says, is such a huge amount of water, and that 150 million gallons, every million gallons is 3 acre-feet of water, which is what 1 acre of berries uses in a year. So 150 million gallons is the amount of water that is used by basically 150 acres of strawberries in a year. So we're talking about the biggest employer, most vital activity going on in terms of research, education in the state of California, that they're saying we need the equivalent water for 150 acres of berries to be able to grow. And, so this is like it's a fiction that the University of California, there's not enough water for them to grow. Maybe there's traffic problems, unmitigatable in housing, but the water is inconsequential for the growth of the University of California, that amount of water. Couldn't be used any better anywhere in the world.
Okay. I understand Jerry Paul is back. He forgot to say one important detail here, so let's put Jerry back on. Hey, Jerry.
I'm so embarrassed. I need to say that if you want the right to vote about desalination and in a way where the city council can't rescind your vote or put a poison pill in the measure to be voted upon, then you need to sign a petition. This week is the deadline, and you can visit rtvod.org, right to vote on desal.org. Either one will do it. The abbreviation works as well as the full name. Thank you, Michael, for letting me back on.
Okay. I'll sign a petition to put anything to a vote. It's the right thing to do. Wouldn't you sign a petition to put anything to a vote?
Sure. Should be
Doug, would you sign a petition to put anything to a vote? Doug?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, Doug.
I was having a interesting discussion here.
Okay. I was asking you if you would sign a petition to put anything to a vote.
Oh, that's a very good point to bring up. Thank you. Now, they have been talking about some votes over there. There's one petition put up by the DSAO Alternatives. It's a group that, by the way, I'm never invited to talk or participate in any of these forums or panels or whatever. But
considered a pariah?
I'm considered a lunatic when I'm in fact only a fanatic. The vote. Now, we've heard one proposal for a vote by the DSAO Alternatives the people of Santa Cruz get to vote. Then we've heard John Leopold talking about, this is a person, the supervisor, who doesn't want to follow the law and declare a groundwater emergency. That's what we're talking about, the DSAO, again, to refresh everybody's recollection. He's talking about, getting a vote for his district. Well, the Soquel Creek Water District and the city of Santa Cruz, why shouldn't every ratepayer in the Soquel Creek Water District and the city of Santa Cruz, SCMU, shouldn't they all have a vote? Shouldn't every ratepayer have a vote? So if there's going to be a vote, every ratepayer should be included, of which I'm not one, by the way.
Should the weight of one's vote or should the number of votes be proportionate to the amount of water use?
No,
the
it should.
Person
wait,
pays
but,
for?
Wait, there should not be a vote. There should be the Board of Supervisors, who are supposed to be supervising our water for us, under the ordinance that Gary Patton wrote in 1987. Please write this down: pogonip.org/ordhtm. You'll see Gary Patton's signature on the well ordinance, which requires declaration of a groundwater emergency and the measures taken to live within our means.
Say that again. pogonip.org/what?
ORD, short for ordinance.htm. It's the well ordinance that Gary Patton wrote and was incorporated into our local coastal plan. Now I want to make sure to say this. The Coastal Commission is basically the agency that is charged with responsibility for our coastal water resources. In the 30 years of your existence here, you will see that they have been intentionally negligent in performing their duty. When I've been appearing before them since 2009, telling them this, you could go to, my name is spelled D-E-I-T-C-H, DougDeitch.com. DouglasDeitch.com, you'll see my video testimony before them. And you will see the late Peter Douglas, the old coastal head, and the new head, Charles Lester, laughing at me at the end of my public comment after I've just told them in year 2010 that the Coastal Commission and Coastal Conservancy is complicit, quote, with the greatest environmental catastrophe in the history of the Monterey Bay region, irremediable. Unquote. And you can see them at the end of that comment laughing at me, laughing at us, really, because I'm
they, because they're in power and
no,
you are not.
Well, no, it's this.
You're just a pawn.
It's not just this. No, excuse me, it's this. I asked this question to them as well. Is water a substance? Yes. Is according to what we're thinking and talking about, is it being abused possibly? Yes. You see, what this is a substance abuse problem. And we're on a regional 15-year collective denial about this. So I'm the guy here who's trying to bring us out of our collective denial as a first step and realize the substance abuse problem that we have. And then that's the first step to a recovery. So
okay. Let's see what Tammy in Boulder Creek has to contribute to the program. Hi, Tammy.
Hi, nice to hear you, Michael. I like this show. You know, we got to talk about water more often, considering it's really like 90% of our bodies. I totally agree with Jan. The fact that he calls it inconsequential, 800,000 gallons per minute during the rainy season flow down the San Lorenzo River and out into the ocean, pissing it away. I'm sorry, but it's a terrible waste. A 5-pound siphon pump with a tube could go down the coast to the Pajaro Valley, simple 12 miles, something like that. We could flood the Pajaro Valley and solve the...
Excuse me. I did not call the flow of the river inconsequential. I call the total amount of water proportionally used in the San Lorenzo River over the total amount that's used in the Monterey Bay relatively inconsequential.
Yeah, because it's not used at all other than for swimming in and pissing out into the ocean.
I'm not talking about the flow of the San Lorenzo River. I'm talking the amount of water used by the residents, since there's no agriculture in the San Lorenzo River watershed.
That's what I mean. It's not being used at all. It should be used. Why isn't it being used?
Because
you could easily have a dam.
As Mr. Paul talked about earlier, we don't have storage for it.
Oh, that's so not true. Look at drive down Highway 9, okay, from Felton, and it's a natural dam. All you got to do is move those 100 people or so that live in Paradise Park. Sorry, Paradise Park people, but
that's
wouldn't
create it anywhere near the capacity that we're talking about.
That would be an awesome, huge reservoir.
Well, the biggest storage in the whole Monterey Bay region, to my knowledge, is Loch Lomond, which is around 9,000 acre feet of storage. The overdraft in the Pajaro Valley, this groundwater basin, every year, I think it's around 45,000 acre feet overdraft every year. So you're not going to anyway. I'm not demeaning the San Lorenzo Valley. I'm just saying, or the flow, the incredible flow of the San Lorenzo River.
But look at the 45,000 or so square feet that could be stored. It could be stored.
There's
that's
no place
a natural
to store
valley.
It, I'm sorry.
That could be a dam right there at the end of town, just before you get to Costco on Highway 9. It's like 400 feet down. It's a complete drop off. It's a perfect natural reservoir.
Now, Tammy does have a point.
Contaminate the aquifer.
What did you say?
Contaminate the aquifer with fresh
water. I'm talking about something about see the problem with the recharge problem. We have plenty of storage. It's called, and we have these reservoirs that you're talking about, huge reservoirs. You know what they're called? They're called aquifers. And if we had lived within
our
means.
How about Alaska pipeline? Nobody said it should be
how about,
done.
How about towing a huge iceberg down here from there when it breaks off? And, you know, how about living within our means with the constraints and the resources that we have and try to model our society here with the kind of, we have plenty of water. We don't have a water scarcity problem. We have a water abuse problem.
We have a water distribution problem because if we were to
Yeah, agribusiness has taken all the
water just in the San Lorenzo Valley, no dam at all, okay? Just a siphon, 5-pound pump, because north to south is already going to siphon south, okay, because of the flow of the Earth's energy. Okay, north to south, even if you're 500 feet up, the siphon's going to work, okay? And the San Lorenzo Valley is definitely 500 feet up most areas, right? So you just siphon it and have a pump. You could have a continuous flow. The water is constantly flowing. I live on a living creek. I'm one of the creeks that flow into the San Lorenzo River, and I can tell you it's the freshest. I have two springs on my property. I have a waterfall, and I'm telling you this water is being wasted.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, but it's being wasted, okay? It's not being used, and it should be. Why is it we have all this water and charge all this money for all these farmers to do their work when we have this free water that could just easily go there? And, you know, and you're talking about building a, whatever, $20 million desalinization plant.
It's $120 million. I think that's a
whatever.
Bad idea.
It's a bad idea.
I'm
but
advocating
electricity.
That.
Yeah, but the thing
I'm
is,
I'm advocating living within our means.
Yeah, and definitely voting on it is a good idea. But
by
the idea of a pipeline, if you've got problems with storage, why not have a constant flow? What's so hard about that? I mean,
and
it seems
the way,
like
Doug.
Yes, sir.
I've received a nudge email from Ed Porter. It says, "Hey, Michael, you asked Doug Deitch a question, whether or not he would sign a petition to put anything on the ballot. Most people would say he should answer yes or no. Instead, he never answered and talked on 12 other topics instead." Ed
Porter used to be the biggest loser in Santa Cruz until I overtook that spot by losing a supervisor. Now, if you want to see a perfect example of the leadership that has not addressed a problem for 30
years. Doug is making me feel like a monkey here because he's pointing out that I asked you a simple question that you refused to answer.
No,
yes or
I vote. Here's how I will vote. I will get elected to the Board of Supervisors, and I will vote for following my oath of office, following the law, and declaring a groundwater emergency to address this problem. Now, wait a second. So Ed is the person who, as an elected official, did not require that his supervisor follow the law, whether it was Gary Patton. Marty Wormhout could have followed this. And instead, I don't know whether he's for the desal plant or not. But I will definitely first of all, I don't have a vote. I am not in Soquel Creek water.
No. But I asked you a simple question.
Okay.
We're not presupposing that you've been elected supervisor.
Well,
I just asked you a simple question.
Sure.
I just asked you if someone shoved a petition under your nose and asked you to sign it, you know, to put something on the ballot. My answer is I always sign petitions to put something on the ballot. I think
I'd have no sure. I would definitely sign to put it on the ballot.
On the ballot, just in general, not even necessary. I'll sign.
No, I won't sign to put anything. No, I won't do that because I think that process can be abused. It costs money to do this. So for frivolous or things I don't believe in, I wouldn't put them on the ballot. But
what about Agenda 21? How come they never put that on a ballot?
I don't support
Agenda 20. I don't even know exactly what that is. But I'll tell you what I do support. I know.
Well, neither does Sam Farr know what it is, or so he says.
If you're into hydrology, you should know what Agenda 21 is.
That's right.
No, actually,
Jan
I don't.
Is right. You should know what Agenda 21 is.
So
you
UN.
Have no business talking about water.
I don't like to be. The Agenda 21 uses the term sustainability, right? And I don't like to be mistaken for someone in Agenda 21 because what I'm talking about when I say sustainability, it has to do with the concept, Judeo-Christian and Islamic concept, I was opposed to, and others, of living within our means, Jan. That's the desal plant with our natural means and being gentle with the earth.
Sorry, this is Tammy. Although I totally agree with Jan. Just, you know, one point on the side, just for you, Michael. I had an email, I'd do it real quick. But did you know the governor of Hawaii is not going to allow Obama to run for office because until he can prove that?
And I heard Arizona also.
Awesome.
So it's starting to happen.
More states. Let's do it.
And I'm a proud birther. And those people who lose points for me, who think I lose
Sheriff
points
Joe.
For me,
Sheriff Joe,
for being
yeah.
being a birther.
Awesome. Yeah.
You know, sorry, you guys should be birthers too. You ought to be ashamed of yourself for allowing this Obama, fraud to be the president of our country. Anyhow,
thank you, Tammy, in
Boulder Creek. Here's Don in Salinas. Don, welcome. Don, welcome to KSCO. You're
Hi.
Right.
Hey. Yeah, your guest, I guess, his name's Doug.
Yes, sir. Doug is one of the guests, and Jason is another guest.
Doug is the guy who says we should all live within our means when it comes to water.
He does. But I think, Jason, do you say that too, Jason?
Yeah, I think we should. I mean, one question that I had was, I know in Santa Cruz, I guess in Santa Cruz County, they've had these conservation measures in place for many years or decades, perhaps. I'm kind of wondering how, you know, conservation and, you know, water efficiency is certainly part of the equation, but can that be quantified? You know, how much has Santa Cruz been able to curtail their water usage by those measures?
I have a few questions for them. Hello?
Yes.
Yeah,
Can you hear me?
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I've got a few questions for them. All righty. Using your guys' attitude, you know, don't change. Try to live within your means. You guys sound like the Amish. You know, if we all had your attitude, we'd all be kicking donkeys in the butt to get stuff moved around our world, and our wells would be buckets going down holes in the ground. You guys, when it comes to advancement, it is the dissatisfied man who has advanced the world since the world began. So you guys being satisfied are holding us back.
I'm not satisfied.
What's that?
When I say live within our means, what that involves is drastically cutting back the agricultural use of our groundwater and significantly lowering agricultural production in this region, which means that we will lose quite a bit of undocumented workers here, but which also means that we will have to develop a compensatory economic engine to replace these jobs for living wage jobs and economic revenue, you know, production. And what
imaginary economic engine that you're talking about, is it going to come out of your butt? Because it ain't going to come out of taking stuff away from people.
It's going to involve intellectual property development like happens in our educational institutions. And I would say my vision is that this occurs down in the Watsonville area because we will need to provide the compensatory economic development if we say to agribusiness, hey, you know, we're in a berry boom now. We cannot sustain what's going on. That's what the problem is. So we have to basically develop a social, economic, and environmental model here, which uses.
So are you saying that the berry industry is going to deprive us of all our water?
Well, the agribusiness here over the last 35 years has permanently and irretrievably ruined the two major groundwater basins in the Salinas Valley and the Pajaro Valley, primarily, so significantly, permanently. Now, why do I say this? Because Andy Fisher, who is a head geologist working on this, when I gave him 10 minutes before the Board of Supervisors to talk about this, they questioned him, as anybody would, recharge. Well, Andy, can we fix this recharge? What he said was, if we do, and if I misquote him, please, he can call in and correct this. If we didn't pump any water at all, okay, then we would see some improvement in 100 years.
Hello?
Yeah, hello?
Yes, hi, Don and Salinas.
I don't think anyone has ever said,
what do you think is something that's going to come out of your butt? I don't think anyone's ever said that on the Saturday special before.
What a terrible thing to say. Now he's going to go and tell the berry pickers in the Pajaro Valley, you're no longer berry pickers. You're nuclear physicists and brain surgeons now because that doesn't use water.
We have the highest percentage of undocumented workers, impoverished, pretty much uneducated workers here, probably in the country. In a population of 660,000 people, we might have an additional 80,000 workers here working in fields, and that's because of the way we use our water.
Our water makes them stupid?
They're very smart in terms of wanting to make a living and coming up here. And let me put it this way, real simple for you. Okay, I don't want to get involved in this other immigration and following the law and aspect. When we use our water diminish the use of it, then agricultural jobs that are basically filled by people undocumented who are not legally supposed to be doing them, they will no longer be here. Those people will no longer be in our community. If we cut the work water by 50%, then 40,000 undocumented workers will no longer be here. Now, we have to replace
them. Why is it we cannot use our brains to come up with a way to get more water?
Well, because
why
we can't.
Why is it that we have to be like you guys say? We're using all the oil. We're using all the water.
Well, that's it. Using water
Jason
as a depletable.
Jason has something to say. Let Jason say it.
Well, I just wanted to add to the earlier question, you know, about living within our means and sustainability. I think you have to work on both sides of the equation. There's a supply side, like a desalination plant, but there's the demand side. And I think one thing we've talked about cost of water here, but it's still the fact that, you know, water is not priced in such a way as to encourage conservation. I mean, maybe that has been working in Santa Cruz. I asked the question earlier about how much have they been able to curtail their water usage as a result of that. But, you know, of course, it's convenient for me to say this as I'm not a resident of that county or that city, but you know, water needs to be priced in such a way as to encourage people to conserve. And it's just, water is not priced in a way to reflect how the water is produced. And, you know, most people really have no appreciation for how much water they use and how water intensive their various, you know, appliances are. And so, again, I favor kind of a portfolio approach to water production, but also, you know, there needs to be work on the demand side, and pricing is a key part of that.
This just in, an email from Jim in Santa Cruz about water. And then after I read that, we're going to do a commercial break here. Jan's fear that Santa Cruz will get control of their water is too late. Santa Cruz already has control of the bulk of the water from the river through their water rights. The excess winter flow that Santa Cruz can't use is theirs to control, and so far they have been reluctant to offer this water for conjunctive use between neighboring water districts. The North Santa Cruz County Regional Water Management Group, guided by John Ricker, the county's environmental director, is pursuing this option, and it deserves the support financially and politically of all the water agencies. Thank you, Jim and Santa Cruz. You're listening to the Saturday special. We are in the final 15 minutes of this program on discussion of water. We will be right back after this commercial break. Stay with us, please.
My name is Mickey Phelps, Crown Catering, powered by Scotts Valley Market. We offer a full range of catering services, from formal to sit-downs to even cheese and wine parties. Let's say you want to have a nice get-together where a few women want to get together after work. We'll come and we'll actually choose some cheeses. I'll pair the wine for you, and we can all have a good time. I can get you up and running in just a few minutes. What makes us different from other catering companies that are out there is that we actually own a store, Scotts Valley Market. So if we need things, we can go to the store and grab them off the shelf versus calling in a distributor. We have them already available to us. We cater from 5 to 5,000. Bring it on, as I say. We are available 24/7, 7 days a week, of course. Crown Catering, 831-566-1425. And guess what, folks? You get to speak with the executive chef, Mickey Phelps. And that's me, folks.
Hi, I'm Nikos. I'm the owner of Terrabella Landscaping.
I really liked your process. I liked the fact that you came here for several sessions, and we talked and just talked about the kinds of things we wanted, and you heard that and were able to put that into a concept that then we were able to kind of tinker with and play with a little bit. And then, I mean, I think it was just a matter of great execution after that. Digging out the hardscape that was in front and then repurposing that for some of the other elements in the front yard. And then, of course, the pavers in the backyard that make up the wall for the vegetable garden, all of that was reused. There's almost nothing in this yard that is the way it used to be. It's really incredible.
We're Terrabella Landscaping, Santa Cruz, California, 831-479-1629, or at gardensforalifetime.com.
Spring is in the air, and that means it's time for...
What?
Allergies?
No, Charlie. It's time for electrical safety.
Of course. Hello, Charlie Friedman here with Chris Jensen from JM Electric. May is National Electric Safety Month.
That's right, Charlie. Every year, thousands are injured or killed by electricity around the home. But thankfully, we now have incredible technologies today, like arc fault circuit interrupters and tamper-resistant receptacles that can protect you from those electrical fires and shocks. JM Electric is happy to help folks out with a free home assessment to see if any of these devices or our current safe testing services are a good fit for their home.
Don't get a free tap dancing lesson from your electrical circuitry. Give my friends at JM Electric a call. They'll come to your home, have an expert look at your electrical systems, and tell you what can be done to make your home safe, just like they did for my home, and their visit won't cost you a dime. Give JM Electric a call at 422-7819 or visit jmelectric.com or on Facebook and tell them Charlie sent you.
We always knew Dr. Guy Peabody to be an excellent dentist, and so we're not surprised when once again Dr. Peabody was voted best dentist in Santa Cruz County in the Good Times Reader's Poll. But you do not need a Reader's Poll to know how good Dr. Peabody is. Just ask his patients.
Hi, I'm Robert. I have found Dr. Peabody to be a wonderful dentist, and I would most highly recommend him to anyone.
My name's Ramona. My dentistry has never been better. I have beautiful teeth now. It was a very comfortable, delightful experience, and I would recommend him to anyone.
My name is Terry. I am terrified of going to the dentist, and they told me about the Guy Peabody sedated dentistry. They're really great people.
Visit drpeabody.com, that's drpeabody.com, or better yet, give Dr. Peabody's office a call at 457-0343 and be warmly welcomed and assisted in scheduling your appointment. That's 457-0343. You will be happy you called Santa Cruz's choice for best dentist.
For over two decades, KSCO has struggled and fought to buck the trends and remain fiercely local, independent, and diverse. And we are honored to serve our communities. Now with the infusion of tens of thousands of new listeners, KSCO and KSCO.com are coming into our own. While cookie-cutter corporate media outlets are falling and failing left and right, KSCO is surviving and thriving thanks to you. There are four simple things you can do to help us stay on this track. Do business with our advertisers and let them know that you are there because of KSCO. Buy Kay's book online or at our website or at the station during business hours. Tell any friend or relative you have who owns a business that KSCO advertising is the best kept business building secret around. And finally, honor your health and ours by joining KSCOteam.com and become a regular wholesale buyer or distributor of the fine longevity health products, Beyond Tangy Tangerine, Pollen Burst, and other supplements that are really good for you and support our operation. Please go to KSCOteam.com and buy those wonderful products. You'll be happy you did.
Welcome back to the closing minutes. We've got about 10 of them left of the Saturday special, hour number two. They're over talking water. Here's Don in Aptos. Welcome, Don, to the Saturday special. You're on, Don.
Hi, Michael. How are you doing? I've gotten to know Doug a little bit over this campaign, and I love the guy to death. I used to be applauded for walking the point on this water issue for probably two decades. I'd like to hear what the solution is from, according to Doug.
Yeah, make it quick, Doug, because we got some other callers, and I have this email from Alan in Watsonville directed at you.
I've mentioned the solution many times, you know, a number of times already, and the basic concept is to live within our means. So that would first involve a determination of regionally, since we're isolated from the rest of California, and what our exact means are.
But you're talking about berry growers are 80% of the overdraft. How do we get berry growers to live within their means?
85%. 85%, because that's what it is. But it's not only berry growers, but that's a major crop here.
Can we ask Don Driscoll to be a guest on one of the
I think you'd
Saturday
want Miles
specials.
Miles Ryder would be a more appropriate guest. Yeah, he's the person who we'd be getting on here. But the people and our elected officials have to basically supervisors, and we need a state created water agency here, one authority, and that's going to involve our elected state officials and our boards of supervisors coming together and to live within our means, determine what our resources are, and how we can most efficiently use them. I don't think we can.
Boy, you're talking about stripping a lot of people of a lot of power and consolidating it.
Which sounds
like a pretty good idea, but you could be creating a monster in the process.
What
would they do? What are they going to make the berry farmers do?
The thing is, they have problems right now with methyl bromide and how they're going to stay in business with their own situation. But what we have to do is basically use there's an ordinance which requires a groundwater emergency, not a desal plant. Now, let me just mention about
that's Gary Patton's ordinance.
Yeah, it's still on the books right now. And as a matter of fact,
I'm going to ask Gary Patton to come on and do a follow up, and I think he will.
It's pretty amazing that the County of Santa Cruz has a mandatory requirement to declare a groundwater emergency if such a condition exists. They haven't done it, and yet everyone else wants to build a desal plant. That's pretty amazing. But still, the question remains. What are you going to make berry farmers do?
Grow less berries. Absolutely, because we can't.
That would have a chilling effect on the prices.
But the prices of berries. But this is not a sustainable sustainable model economy we have here. We're in a berry boom, and we're going to have a bust. There's going to be a fall because we're using our water up. It's not a sustainable.
We're shipping
water.
It up.
We're expropriating our water supply. Every year we ship out the equivalent of five desal plants. $520 million desal plants and berries in the Pajaro Valley. Well, we grow $500 million in berries. We ship out $600 million in equivalent desal water costs.
Yeah.
Now, Bill here was talking about he's an apple grower, which is my gods here, people who haven't changed their land from apple to berry production.
Bill, or Don?
No, I'm talking about the engineer here.
And he is
you paying $95 an acre foot for growing the best thing you possibly could here. Well, that desal, if you had to pay for acre foot or desal, that's maybe $7,000 or $8,000 according to this ratepayer. So we cannot keep up this model of the economy, and we have to. It's a substance abuse problem, and we have to come out of denial.
Okay,
Don,
I want to thank you for your call. We got to move on here.
Thanks for the call, Don.
Thank you, appreciate it. Al Mohol says, "Hi, MZ. I have followed the water discussions for a number of years now, and as a historian, I can only suggest that no one involved cares much about history. I believe that the saltwater intrusion, which has been touted as being the result of overpumping, was actually created by activities begun in the early 1870s with the opening of freshwater barriers that were created naturally and replenished by the lagoons along the coast. We have opened the barrier, the harbor at Moss Landing, or channelized the river mouths to prevent the flooding at the coast, Pajaro and San Lorenzo rivers. In 1866, there was an artesian well on Sandholt Road at Moss Landing at the beach. At the mouth of the Pajaro, there was an artesian well in the 1880s at Camp Goodall. And it was recorded that during a severe drought that the only place there was water was along Beach Road, which is supposedly the most impacted area today. I think Mr. Deitch needs to study some history. Perhaps we can rebuild the protective freshwater barrier as they are doing in Southern California." That's from Alan in Watsonville. Thank you, Alan. And I believe at 11:56, we have time for one more caller. That would be Richard N. Watsonville. Richard, you're on the air.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I think this Mr. Deitch needs to not only look at history, but understand we got more water than we'll ever need. Ever. And for him to think that going after the berry guys is going to do anything, those people probably utilize and respect water more than anybody else. They're not like the Castroville artichoke farmers throwing the water all over the place during the daytime. It's all underground. But the thing is the long-term plan is the Santa Cruz to hook up with Capitola and Soquel, and then to hook up with the Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency, and those guys are going to run a pipeline out Highway 129 over to the San Luis Dam. And that's where you people are going to get your drinking water from.
They
don't say they can't
that's
do it.
Dead.
It's already in the works, isn't it, Doug?
It's dead.
It's not dead.
Doug knows it's dead. They can't do that.
That was projected to bring in 11.9 thousand acre feet a year of the 44,000, one quarter of what the present overdraft is. But that project,
long-term plan, Doug.
That's not on the table anymore.
Oh, it's not only on the table. The farmers have already been talked to, and the deal's already been worked out, and the plan's already worked out. They're just waiting for you guys to fight it out and waste all your stupid money. I'm telling you, there's more water here. All the water comes to the ocean, whether it's underground or above ground.
Now it's going in a different direction. It's coming from the ocean into the groundwater basin, I'm afraid, but I'm sorry. You know, there's a thing. Reasonable minds may differ, and maybe we're just having a differing of reasonable minds.
No. We take and we put 12 million gallons of affluent water into that ocean or that sewer plant every day. Would you drink it?
Well, they have a reclamation plant.
Would you drink it, Doug?
Would you
drink that water, Doug?
It depends on the level of treatment. I'm not
sure. It's affluent water. It's supposed to be drinking water that they're putting back in the ocean. Would you drink it?
I would, but I have my own well with good water. I'm trying to keep the excellent water I have in my well.
Listen, Doug, would you drink it if I boiled it?
Well, if I had to.
Okay, I'll boil it, and that's the end of your water problems.
It takes energy.
Richard Ed Watsonville,
you're
not being very realistic.
You can't totally boil
enough water for Doug, let alone
anybody else.
I don't even
have to light a match. I use a magnifying glass. How's that?
Okay, Richard Ed Watsonville.
In order to boil that water so Doug can have something to drink.
This is stupid.
If you don't like the water that way, then inject the water back into the wells that they say are salty along the coast and drive the salt water back, Doug.
How about just not taking so much out in the first place? Living with the
It doesn't matter. You got more than you need sitting right there in the ocean. More than you'll ever need. So what is your problem?
Richard could be right.
The problem is they keep sending Michael a bill that he doesn't like every year. And we're going to do a Saturday special about his bill.
Wait until you see the bill. But let me just say this now. The biggest proponent of this is Mike Rotkin. Who you had on here last week? I wish you had asked him this.
Yeah, I thought we were going to have a water discussion last week. We didn't have Jack.
Mike Rotkin.
Okay, well, wait a minute.
That's the biggest thing against
him. But guess what, gang? It's the end. I want to thank Jason Holt. I want to thank Doug Deitch. I want to thank Richard and Watsonville. I want to thank Billy Easton, Richard back at the station. And you are wonderful listeners, without which we would be nothing. It's KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, San Jose. It's 12 noon. That's the end of the Saturday special.
CBS News, I'm Sharon Middleman. The NATO summit in Chicago hasn't even started, and already arrests are being made. Three men were arrested in a raid on a Chicago apartment. Prosecutors say the trio had planned to attack the home of Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel and the campaign headquarters of President Obama. Cook County State's Attorney Anita Alvarez.
These weapons included a mortar gun, swords, a hunting bow, throwing stars, and knives with brass knuckle handles.
While President Obama isn't in Chicago yet, he's hosting a summit of G8 leaders at Camp David, Maryland. CBS's Pam Coulter joins us live from Washington with the latest on the summit.
Sharon, with the European crisis threatening to drag down the global economy, G8 leaders agree it's their imperative to promote growth and jobs.
The major contribution we can make to the global economy is to grow. And so that is our focus.
But Deputy National Security Advisor Mike Froman says it will not be a one-size-fits-all approach. And in advance of an EU embargo of Iranian oil, summiteers said they would consider releasing strategic oil supplies.
It's to provide assurance that we are determined to implement the sanctions fully and make sure that the markets are fully and adequately supplied.
Sharon?
A Chinese dissident who escaped house arrest last month is on a plane right now, along with his family, headed to the United States.
We note that Mr. Chen and his wife are on their way to the United States. We welcome this development and the fact that he'll be able to pursue a course of study.
Well, that's Deputy National Security Advisor Ben Rhodes. Chen Guangcheng was released after weeks of negotiations with the United States. He'll be studying law at New York University Law School. A bomb exploded today as students gathered for Saturday classes at a girls' school in Brindisi, Italy. A 16-year-old girl was killed and several students were injured. CBS News reporter Sabina Castelfranco is in Rome.
This is a school that is named after the most important anti-mafia prosecutor from Sicily, Giovanni Falcone, who was killed with his wife exactly 20 years ago this weekend. It's unclear at the moment whether there is an organized crime link.
A wildfire burning in Arizona has scorched about 20 square miles. The wildfire forced the evacuation of the historic mining town of Crown King. Three homes and a trailer have been destroyed. Rescue crews in Iowa are searching the Mississippi River after an overnight boat collision. Kevin Baskins is with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources.
Four of those passengers are still missing. There's a fairly intense search still going on to try and locate those four individuals.
Eight people have been rescued. Several children have been injured in a multiple school bus crash in Newton County, Georgia. The group was reportedly on its way to a Six Flags theme park. Reports say seven school buses were involved in the crash. This is CBS News.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, president of Quicken Loans. Quicken Loans has a program with an interest rate that's dramatically lower than the current rate on a 30-year mortgage. It's called our amazing 7-1 adjustable rate mortgage. The rate today on a 7-year adjustable rate mortgage is an amazing 2.75%, APR 3.03%. It's locked until the year 2020. After that, rates may adjust once per year. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN. We'll help you keep more of that hard-earned money in your pocket where it belongs. Maybe that's why, for the second year in a row, J.D. Power & Associates ranked Quicken Loans highest in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination in the United States. There's never been a more perfect time to refinance than right now. Again, the rate today on a 7-year adjustable rate mortgage is an amazing 2.75%, APR 3.03%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN. That's 800-QUICKEN, or visit us at quickenloans.com.
For J.D. Power & Associates award information, visit jdpower.com. Adjustable rate subject to change. Call us for cost information. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
He's a record runner.
You might say 62-year-old Henry Rudin of De Pere, Wisconsin, has been there, run that.
I've run all the states in D.C. 10 times so far. I've done all seven continents already.
Sunday, he runs in his 800th marathon. Not a record, but definitely in elite company. Memories? Plenty. It was the time at the South Pole.
I got to go up a glacier twice, and the first time it's pretty solid. By the time you come back, and the second time it gets a little bit, with the sun, it starts to melt.
And one in Canada?
I happen to saw a mountain lion, and I'm saying, nice place to get you. Stay where you are. I don't need to be any closer.
And he says the 800th marathon is far from his last. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
A 73-year-old Japanese woman has climbed Mount Everest, reaching the summit. Tamei Watanabe broke her own record. She climbed Everest 10 years ago when she was 63, becoming the oldest woman then to scale the mountain and reach the 29,035-foot-high summit. I'm Sharon Middleman, CBS News.
Get in the zone!
Summer's coming, so make sure your battery can handle the heat. Get it tested for free today at AutoZone before you get stranded. And if yours needs replacing, go with a proven tough Duralast battery, only at AutoZone. They're built with patented technologies to deliver the most power during startup in even the most extreme conditions. As temperatures go up, keep your battery going strong with help from AutoZone. Parts are just part of what we do.
Get in the zone.
AutoZone.
Good afternoon. You have it tuned in to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz. It's 5 minutes after noon on this Saturday, May 19th, 2012. I'm Easton Allen with an update on your Central Coast roadways and your Central Coast weather. Out there on the roadways in the Salinas area, Highway 101 near Espinosa Road, we have a stalled vehicle in the roadway there. CHP on the scene and an accident in Santa Cruz, the 2700 block of Huntington Drive. Tow truck on the scene for that.